Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Wisdom of Ages, Sack. Ethan, I saw a screenshot in Discord with your hand as wide as the screen, and I can only assume it is from this 4 blue, blue, blue sorcery that lets you return all instant sorceries from your graveyard to your hand and gives you no maximum hand size for the rest of the game.
That is true. I had a 3-creature Wisdom of the Ages deck that...
Oh, it's beautiful.
That trophied. And I hadn't been hearing you, like, I know that you're, this semester is just very busy for you. So I recognize why I'm not getting extracurricular messages from you around like decks you're drafting. But I was like, as I've been mostly drafting blue-red decks and blue-red XXX soup splash decks this week, I was like, Ben has to be drafting this stuff, right? Because this is your jam. Like, you, the blue-red spells life, there are so many, like, sorceresses schemes, cursed recording adjacent things to be doing in this format. I hope you've had the pleasure of doing so.
I have the last few days. I played against LSV and barely beat LSV with one of my red-white decks that was, like, a very synergistic leaves-the-graveyard red-white deck. And LSV was playing his usual ramp, teamer, like win the late game stuff. And he was mythic, like 100 or whatever. And I was still platinum, maybe. And I was like, we can't have this. We can't have LR having somebody in mythic and me being in platinum. So I was resolved to get to mythic. And I did get to mythic in the game before we started recording.
Whoa.
So you're now listening to a mythic podcaster.
That's why I messaged Ben. I was like, I'm setting up. I'm ready when you are. And he was like, oh, no rush.
No rush. Had to get that last dub to get over the finish line. But the last few days I've been playing a lot of win the late games decks, and Mind Over Matter, I think, is my favorite go over the top card in the format. Either that or Mathemagics.
Interesting. So I haven't got the only card I have experience with of those win the late game cards is Wisdom of Ages. And honestly, I would say Divergent Equation, the uncommon, does like a fine impression a lot of the time.
No, you haven't lived, my friend. If you've only played with Wisdom of Ages, Divergent Equation is Wisdom of Ages at home, but like Wisdom of Ages at home, like 3 times removed. Like we're real poor and we're going to the Dollar Tree to pick up Divergent Equation.
I mean, I understand. I had 19 cards in my hand, but like, Divergent Equation for 3 is very, very good in this format. When you're in like the massive soup mirrors, maybe it doesn't get the job done, but I will hear no slander against Divergent Equation. I want to talk to you about Mind Into Matter later on in the episode, because I know we're going to talk about soup. We're going to talk about the late game stuff. This is our week one format dump. But Mind Into Matter is a card I have some questions about just in terms of the kinds of decks I've been drafting. But yeah, I'm excited to dig into this format and hear your thoughts, because like I said, I haven't gotten no extracurricular messages.
Yeah, I've played both ends of the spectrum. I've played a lot of Boros and I've played a lot of win the late game ramp type decks, and I have thoroughly enjoyed both. It's weird. I feel like the format is already done. Like, I feel like I see the Matrix. Like, I have been savaging this format completely, and I think I don't see tons of new things popping up, but everything that there is to do is extremely fun, and I think the drafts are interesting. So I'm here for the format.
I think I am too. I am expecting, and maybe it won't be in best of one, maybe you have to shift to best of 3, but there's got to be a shift, right? Much like I think we saw a little bit of a shift in Tarkir Dragonstorm, which we will have some comps to this format this episode. We saw a shift, like, once people realized how to do the Dragonstorm 5-color soup decks, those were not as readily accessible. And I assume we'll see a shift eventually around drafting these 5-color decks too.
But I mean, I've already done that, because I started in Boros. Like, I feel like I've already done, I started in the aggressive half of the format and then
shifted your own fault.
To the rampier side of the format. It is not. I was drafting well. I was drafting good Boros decks. But I do think this format is nearly identical to Tarkir Dragonstorm in terms of what it incentivizes you to do in the drafts, in the deck building, and in the gameplay.
Yes, I agree. Let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show. We have some great perks over at the Patreon. Some new stuff that rolled out this week. We'll first, of course, talk about the Discord, which is a great community of like-minded limited individuals. In that Discord, we now have a gameplay reviewed channel where folks can post gameplays to be reviewed by yours truly. So I dropped my first gameplay review video to the patrons this week, which was awesome. Got some great conversations started there. And started doing some Discord streams this week as well, which has been really, really fun. Just streaming to, you know, about 20-ish people, which has been really, really cool. Getting to get in touch with our patrons there. And it's nice because, like, sometimes when I'm like, I want to stream, but firing up a Twitch stream and I don't have that much time, the Discord stream, I don't feel like I have any sort of time pressure there. So it's nice to just be able to pop in for a draft and a half, whatever. So that stuff is great. And then at higher reward tier rankings, you can get access to our podcast feed where you get not only this episode a day early ad free, but also access to our bonus weekly episode of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please, please head on over to our Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Matthew, Dovin, Jason, Hot River, and Wesley. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Cannot say thank you enough.
Ben, I have to ask you, in your Lorehold life, are you a believer of our game in hand win rate, number one common, pursue the past?
Oh, I haven't looked at 17 lands. I meant to do it that this morning.
A wild scene, my man. It is a wild scene.
A wild scene? Pursue the past, is that the rummaging card?
That's the number one common in the set, baby, and it's no not even chance. Close.
What?
That's according to Gen Pop. That's not according to Top Drafters. I haven't filtered by that, but Pursue the Past, number one common. What do you say? Microphone in your face.
I haven't come close to wanting to ever put that card in my deck.
We got
that's
him.
So funny.
We got
oh,
him.
Oh man, that's good content right there. Yeah, I had no idea. What?
Yeah.
What are people doing?
I mean, it's all Boros cards at the top of the charts in terms of commons, which leads me to, I know you've got a great list of revised format truths that I am mostly lockstep with and have some questions about. My one main format truth, and maybe we'll get to this when we talk about navigating drafts, is just like the rarity common has never mattered less is my format truth. Like I am trying my hardest, picks 1 through 8, to not take a common, whatever I can do to not draft commons. And I think, and this doesn't speak to the bomby nature of the format. It just speaks to how bad or filler plus, as we kept saying last week about a lot of commons, the amount of commons in your deck, I think directly correlates to how many losses you're going to get. More commons equals more losses. Cause that just means you don't have uncommons or rares in your deck in place of them. That's my big bold take for the format.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to be playing with the good cards because the good cards. I mean, that was what we talked about last week. There's a gaping cliff between the cards that matter and the cards that don't.
But like, if I could go back to the crash course, I would have come and been like, my list of notable commons is 2 cards.
No, that's aggressive.
Yes. Nope. I don't. Not for me. There are 2 commons that make the exception for what I'm like 2, maybe 3. Except the rule of I want to not take commons pick 1 through pick 8. But there's definitely not 10.
Which are what? What are the two that stand out to you?
Tome Blast and Elite Interceptor.
Tome Blast is so good. I love
Tome Blast
that
is so
card.
Good and you get it pick 8. I don't know why, but you do. But this is largely because like what I'm trying to do, and I guess we're just kind of bopping around, but I'm excited to talk to you about a new format. What I'm trying to do is either take the most powerful things I can out of every pack or read signals. And those signals are going to come later in the pack or on the wheel. And that's when I'll get my red-white 2-drop that grows when things leave my graveyard. I'm not trying to get those pick 5. Like if Boros is open, I'm going to get that pick 9, pick 11, and pick 13, you know?
Yeah, I hear you 100%. I'm looking at the data right now, and it is.
Oh, he's. That's why I was looking at Ben's face. I was like, is he disagreeing? Is he listening to me? Well, he wasn't listening, so that's good. What are you seeing on the 17 lands there, buddy?
I was halfway listening, live looking at 17 lands data right now.
It's a wild scene. What are you doing? This is not going to teach you anything.
It is a wild scene.
Samp was sharing in our Discord the like. Average taken at sorting the gold cards by average taken at which just shows that everyone is taking the Witherbloom cards higher than everything else, even though Witherbloom is the worst thing to be doing.
Is that shown by the data as well? Or is that a personal opinion?
I think Witherbloom being the worst thing to do. It's tough because Witherbloom has not been doing well, I think, writ large. But I think that I don't think it's that bad, but I also just haven't had the opportunity to draft it. Like, I'll draft it if it's open. It's just never been open because people are taking the Witherbloom cards higher than anything else.
Correct.
Like, I'm not taking a Bogwater Lumeret before pick 9.
For sure. You can't. You just can't do that.
Some people do.
I guess some people do. We can't stop you if that's you. But I think overarchingly, I would also have Witherbloom in last place now. Not because it's a bad deck. It is a good deck. But what it is it's a great mid-range deck. And you don't want to be playing mid-range in this format. Because sometimes you randomly stumble and lose to the good aggressive starts, or the aggressive stuff can have enough of a synergistic package to where you still lose to the Witherbloom decks, and then Witherbloom always loses to the decks that are planning to win the late game.
Because, like, Witherbloom's one tool of, like, aha, my life total is buffered. The big soup decks are like, I don't care.
Don't care,
I'm playing a totally different game than that.
Yeah.
This is where I think, like, either the meta will shift, or maybe in pod play, those mid-range decks have to be better, because if people are fighting over appropriately the soupy payoffs, then those decks come together much less often, and then there's places for mid-range to shine. I had this really this bad draft earlier this week.
Love a good bad draft story.
Set the stage. Well, I think I even pack one, pick one, did Eternal Student, the 3 and a black, 4/2 that you can exile for 1 and a black to make 2/1/1 flyers. And I was like, great, awesome. Then I got a second one somewhere along the draft. I was like,
that doesn't feel great to me. Like,
just wait.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Go on a journey with me.
Okay.
So I took the second one. I was like, oh, awesome. I got the third one. It was like you know that Vince McMahon meme where it's like the four panels of like him being like, like that's how it was for me with the third one. And then I got the fourth one, pack 3, pick 8. And I was like, is this card bad? And it kind of is. And as I was like, then I was like, wait a minute. Like, this doesn't do anything for Witherbloom. This doesn't do anything for Silver Quill. It's getting me in this like mid-range space. I think this card just isn't, it's like a great card that is homeless in this format, I think.
Yeah, that's how Witherbloom is a
realization for me after getting four of them in a draft. But that was the journey I went on.
I went on that same journey with Campus Composer, the 3/3/4 ward 2 that then you can pay 5 to make a 3/3 flyer. I got it pack 3, pick 8, and I was like, what are people doing? And then I was like, wait a second. I don't think this is going to make my deck.
It's wild how many cards are like that in the format. Where like Charging Strife Knight is another great example. The 2 and a red, 3/3, haste, and you can rummage with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, great card on paper. Yes. Not a great card in this format. I saw Ryan Overturf posted on Blue Sky. He was like waxing poetic about the common 2 blue red, 4/4 that when it enters or attacks, you can draw a card, discard a card. And he was like, I can't imagine a world where like this isn't just a great common. I was like,
that card's horrible, buddy.
Who wants to tell him that card's unplayable? Like, should it be me? Should it be someone else?
Completely unplayable.
But
I'll do it if nobody's done it yet.
I just feel like it's so weird. Like, I've shifted so much of my normal baselines for card evals in this format.
Which is fun. That's why I'm having fun in the format. But once you make the switch, you really do see the matrix, and there's like, you're incentivized to do the same things over and over and over, at least in best of one. So I am excited to branch out into best of three and to do some Magic Online drafts.
Yes. Okay. Let's get into these revised format truths.
Number one, paying attention during the draft is extremely important.
Amen.
You just have to notice what's going by, and it's different the normal for how you pay attention during the drafts. Because I think the drafts incentivize you to pair cards with what you have, but you definitely don't ever, to your point, want to take hits in power level to pair cards with what you have. So you're doing this dance of like trying to get your cards to steer in the same direction, but also not take hits in power at the same time. And then sometimes that means you have to, like, be drafting two decks simultaneously until it becomes apparent which one's more open. And I'm very fine drafting, like, okay, I got some white cards over here that might go in aggro. Okay, I've got some stuff over here that might go in Quandrix, and then I've got maybe this one thing that might steer me towards soup. And you have to be open. I think one of the things we're talking about is soup, which to me, I'm curious what your let's stop and like put it, it's like tempo, because I think people are saying soup and it means a lot of different things right now. What is soup? Well,
I'm being set up because you clearly have a very strong perception of what.
Okay,
the
well, I will
is.
Tell you mine and you see if you agree with it.
And then
okay,
I won't
set you up to fail. There you go. Yeah, I'll go first. I think to me, soup is ramp primarily. I think soup is you're trying to ramp to Snarl Song either as a converge payoff, which is the make XX is equal to the amount of mana spent to cast it and then gain X life. Or you're trying to ramp to one of the cards that are absurd, that go completely over the top of everything else in the format. And then you're doing this dance while doing that of trying to not die to white aggro, but making sure that you go over top of everybody else who's trying to go over the top.
I think I largely agree. I just want to say you're using the word ramp, and I don't think you mean ramp, or maybe you do. Do you mean specifically cards that accelerate your land drops?
I do, specifically. So, like, the play pattern I want to do with the decks that I'm calling soup are, like, turn two, Tome Blaster 2-drop, or okay. something of the equivalent. Turn three, tap out for a Potioner's Trove. Turn five, do something, either draw a bunch of cards or like make a play, counter your spell, something like that. And then turn six, stick a Snarl Song. Or from there, like if I don't have Snarl Songs, keep ramping, drawing cards, picking off your threats until I can cast some big endgame finisher. But I do want to accelerate my mana.
So I guess, yeah, I guess soup for me also encompasses the decks I've been drafting, but maybe you would just call them control decks, which are like blue-red base control decks that are often playing two to three other colors. And so they have Potioners. I mean, it's still doing the same play pattern I guess you're talking about. In those decks, I do have a two-mana removal spell into Potioner's Trove a lot of the time. But I don't think of ramp as being the key. I just think of late, like, I just think of it as late game and multicolor as soup, is how I would define it.
Yeah, but I want to get to the late game faster, I think. Like the
you
want
to get to
your
big spells faster. I'm specifically just saying I just want the game to go as long as possible. You're saying I want to get to those big spells quickly.
Yes, I think so. Like I'm in for playing Zamones, whatever. Like the three and a green sorcery. Look at the top five.
Oh,
get two lands. Put them tapped.
Stock up at home.
Stock up at home. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That card, for example, I'm happy to play to ramp me to a Snarl Song. Now, these decks I'm describing often have like two to three copies of Snarl Songs plus a couple other good late game things. But I think when you have the great late game, getting to it faster. And then there is a control version of it, too, that's more about like, OK, pick off your thing, two for one you, and then I'm just going to grind you out.
Yeah, for me, ramping is less important. Hitting land drops is very important, like Environmental Scientist is incredible.
So important.
The three mana artifact that searches up a land is incredible. So like, I don't care that much about getting ahead with my lands, but I do want to make sure I have cards that ensure I hit land drops.
But anyway, I think it is, whatever your definition of soup is, it is very easy to end up in a soupy deck if you're not careful. And I think you want to stay open to it without steering towards it, because there's so many different ways for it to come together. Like, you need to be open to the idea that my deck can always morph into this late game, try to win the late game deck, but I don't want to lock it in until I have one of several key cards that I feel like are going to let me trump the late game.
The thing that I will say that I feel like is very different about this format than others for me is oftentimes I would be trying to draft in a way that gets me deep into a color. And I am basically never doing that in this format.
Yes.
Like I would usually say like, well, if things are close or you're taking a slight hidden power level to get deep in a color, I'm not doing that at all. I'm trying to take zero hits in power level, picks 1 through 8. I just want to take the best cards out of every pack. what is going to happen, what largely happens with that is either the best card out of every pack goes in the same deck because that deck is open.
Yes.
The best card out of every pack isn't that good, and something presents itself later in the pack, and I scrap a bunch of picks. I drafted a Lorehold deck today. My first four picks were blue. I'm fine chucking those in the garbage. Because I was clearly the only Lorehold drafter at the table, and that's what I want. That's where I want to position myself.
And if you are the only drafter, you are overfloweth with playables. Like, right. It does not matter that your
lands
your
are
cards.
Very high picks. As a result, in my opinion, like once I know that a lane is that open, I'm taking lands whenever I can because I really want to make my mana base good, which then leads to potentially being able to have a light splash in a deck, which brings back to just like, I just want to take the best cards I see as much as I possibly can. And then the third thing that happens is you get to take those powerful cards and glue them together in a soup deck. So like either you draft you start the draft open from jump. Great. And that's the thing that's open. You start the draft doing something. Something else presents itself. You go into that. Or you string together the best things that you see into a multicolor pile. And because that is what's open. But like you can get into tricky spots where like, don't just think that, oh, if I get an environmental scientist early, because that's the best card, into that 3-mana vehicle that finds a land. Don't then go, oh, I want to try and draft soup. Because if the payoffs don't, if you don't get the converge payoffs, if you don't see powerful bombs, your deck is going to be atrocious.
Correct. Yeah. You can't assume, I think you shouldn't assume that you are going to be soup early. Let it coalesce late. Soup needs time to simmer.
Yeah. This is like we've talked about gumption before in terms of like build it and they will come. This is the opposite. Could not be further from a build it and they will come draft format. This is like reading signals is of the utmost importance.
Format truth number two, which I think kind of goes along with everything we just talked about in number one. In addition to color, notice the in quotes types of cards you're seeing during the draft. So are you seeing a density of aggressive creatures? Are you seeing a density of removal? Are you seeing a density of a certain college's cards? Are you seeing cards that let you win the late game? And color is less important than normal because there's, like you said, there's so many ways to glue six picks together once you decide you need to glue six picks together. Like if you're drafting and then you get a pack one pick five Snarl Song, you can be like, great, okay, I'm going to pull all these things together and I have plenty of time to do so. You can even do that with pick two or pick three Snarl Songs. You have to make some decisions early on about, am I going to try to be white aggressive? Or am I going to be some other college and then potentially let that other college morph into soup? Like frequently that's Prismari or Quandrix that then spins out into soup. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things, we're both down on Witherbloom. I'm also pretty down on black because I don't feel like black lets you do that pivot. Like black basically for me, I don't want to be Witherbloom. So it's only good with Silverquill, but Silverquill is way better starting base white. And it's hard to spin black starts into multicolored soup. It just doesn't happen nearly as naturally as it does in the teamer space.
Yes. Yeah. Black feels on the outside of either what I think are the two pillars of the format, which are these white aggressive decks or these late game decks. And I sort of feel like blue and red sit at the nicest intersection because I feel like the blue, red, and blue green decks are doing similar-ish things and the red, like, pivoting into Prismari or Lorehold from a red start is pretty easy, whereas it's harder from other colors, I think. Like, if you start with green, it's like, okay, my Quandrix decks and my Witherbloom decks are going to look very different.
Correct. Yeah, I don't love starting green either. I really want to start in the blue-red space if I can, or if white's clearly open, I'm also glad. Like, somewhere in the Jeskai space is where I prefer to start.
Yes, I'm with you there. I want to just highlight this the third point here of a density of a certain college's cards. This has been the biggest signal giver for me in drafts. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to take a card out of that pack, but it's the most information I get. Like if pick seven, you're seeing like two white commons, two black commons. I'm not saying like, oh, you should take one of those cards because I don't want to take commons there, but I am clocking. That might mean Silverquill is open. And I'm hoping to get better information or better cards that support that information. But if you're not clocking that, you're losing out on seeing what might be flowing towards you.
And sometimes it's also important, this is why you have to pay attention during the draft so much. Sometimes it's also important to note that, know that it might be right for you to do that and still make another decision anyway because of what you've already had before. Like there's a lot of factors to consider, I think, because of how diverse the format is in terms of the polls. Like the aggressive decks are extremely aggressive and the late game decks are extremely good at winning the late game.
Yes.
Number three, let the two color decks fall into your lap and guide themselves based on your good cards. So we haven't talked about this much, but not all Lorehold decks look the same. Not all Witherbloom decks look the same. Certainly not all Prismari decks look the same. I think Prismari has the most range of any of them, maybe Prismari and Lorehold. But for example, I've had Boros decks that would never cut Rubble Rouser ever in their lives. Like 2 red, 1/4 when it enters, you can rummage, and then you tap exile a card from your graveyard to make a red, deal a damage to an opponent. I've had Boros decks that would also never put that card in the deck because they were so aggressive and didn't have the leave the graveyard synergy.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I was going to ask why, but it sounds like, yeah, they're the more aggressive and cabs theory, not synergistic decks don't want Rubble Rouser. And the more leave the graveyard stuff you have, the more you definitely want as many Rubble Rousers as you can get your hands on.
But those are like two very distinctly different decks. And I drafted them back to back and I was like, whoa, this is weird that both of them were great, but I think incentivized you to do different things. And I had a lot of white repartee rares in the one deck, and I had next to none of those in the other deck, and I had a lot of the good leaves the graveyard stuff. I had an Arc of Hunger in the second card. That rare is particularly dumb. We'll talk about that later. Number four, know when your deck wants the game to end and cover your bases accordingly. So the soup decks, the ramp decks, whatever you want to call it, really need early removal and ways to go over the top to win the late game, because you need to not die to the aggressive decks and you need to trump the other soup decks. Aggro really needs to make sure that it has no frills and a bunch of ways to close out the game. And then college decks need to make sure that their cards all pull in the same direction and have plans for how to not lose to soup. Because I think generally the college decks, certainly like Witherbloom or Quandrix or whatever, beat the aggro decks. They're very good mid-range decks and don't usually have trouble with the aggro decks, but they do have trouble with losing to the soup decks. So just figuring out how to not auto lose the late game for a college deck.
Yeah. Okay. That tracks.
Number five, don't forget to pack card advantage and ways to hit land drops. So
yeah,
there's this weird thing that tends to happen in the format in soup mirrors, where sometimes nobody plays creatures early, but you have to put interaction in those soup decks. And if your hand is a Braid and Tome Blast and some stuff that you're planning to cast later, and your opponent is casting Quick Studies and drawing cards, like, you just lose that game. Like there's no way. So you got to make sure you have your own Quick Studies and other ways to hit land drops so that you're not staring at a handful of interaction when your opponent is ramping.
Yes, I agree.
So it's really disastrous if you can't spend your mana while your opponent is drawing cards. So stuff like Quick Study is a huge mover up for me. The 2 and a blue instant, draw 2 cards. I love that card. It helps you hit land drops, keeps the card draw flowing. Similarly, Cost of Brilliance, if you're not touching blue, like, I do think Cost of Brilliance is very good in Silver Quill and Witherbloom. The 2 and a black sorcery, target player draws 2 cards and loses 2 life, put a +1/+1 counter up to 1 target creature. It's not premium or anything, but you're happy to play it in those decks.
Yeah, both of these are filler plus. I just want to get check our excitement around commons.
I'm pretty excited about Quick Study. Cost of Brilliance, less so.
I haven't cast a Quick Study in this format yet. I don't think Quick Study is that good.
No, that's not possible.
It's 100% possible. And I
100%
like
possible?
I don't like Quick Study. Cost of Brilliance, I think, does more, like, I have found Cost of Brilliance to be quite effective out of Silver Quill specifically against me, because when I'm in the sort of like, I just need to stabilize and then I'll win, and then when they're like, oh, I got 2 more cards and a repartee trigger, I'm like, dang it, that's another thing for me to have to overcome. Quick Study, so I think you can do better in blue with Quick Study.
How what cards that help you hit land drops like that early?
I'm thinking of the 3-mana vehicle. I'm thinking of, it doesn't help you at land drops, but Potioner's Trove is a ramp mana enabler. But I'm not trying to, like, little card bursts like Quick Study or Deduce does not do it for me. I just feel like there are bigger ways to draw cards, and that's what I want to do.
Interesting. But you have to hit your land drops to get to the bigger card. Like, I want a quick study once, probably into then one of my bigger card draw spells. Because I feel like...
I mean, does sleight of hand count?
Sure. If it helps me hit land drops, yeah.
Yeah. Then I'll happily play sleight of hand in those decks.
Sure. But I think... I feel similarly about the late game decks in this format, where I never want to miss a land drop, mm-hmm. to how I did in OG Dominaria. You know how good Divination was there? Because like,
yes.
It just made sure you were going to hit land drop 4 and mm-hmm. land drop 5. That's how I feel about Quick Study here.
Yes, I agree that I don't want to miss land drops. And I think Prismari specifically like never, ever runs out of things to do with its mana. I'm just hoping that those things aren't Quick Study for me.
And then heavy hitters like Divergent Equation, you're a big fan of this one. Mm-hmm. I am less so. Blue XX instant, return up to X target instant or sorcery cards from your graveyard to your hand, exile Divergent Equation. That at the end of a game, or even Arcane Omens. We talked about this last week a little bit, and I poo-pooed it. 4 and a black, sorcery converge, target player discards X cards, where X is the number of colors of mana spent to cast a spell. Arcane Omens is a mirror breaker in mm-hmm. the soup late game stuff. It is atrocious if you're playing in Lorehold or Silverquill, so ways to rummage or loot or whatever if you have this in your deck are appreciated, and I do think that sort of effect is good in the soup decks for that reason, because you have cards for each of the matchups, and you want to find your win the late game matchups against late game decks, and you want to find your win the aggro matchup against the aggro decks. So maybe that checks out. Maybe 17 lands is brilliant, and that's why the rummaging card is good. I just...
Pursue the Past is good. Helps you at land drops.
It's just so low powered compared to the other ways to do it in the format. Yes. But, I mean, in that sense, it makes sense to me. But I think rares like Wisdom of the Ages, which is the card we talked about that lets you rebuy all your instant or sorceries, or Mind in a Matter, blue-green X, draw X, put a permanent equal to X onto the battlefield. Those are just so much better than Divergent Equation or Arcane Omens. Like, it just, yes. It just ramps up at each level of rarity you go to.
For sure.
And lastly, a number 6 here, which is, should have been in the first 5, but I couldn't figure out one to cut or how to combine them. But don't fall behind where your deck wants to be. Like, when I'm behind in this format, it never goes well for me. So like, if I'm playing aggro and my aggro deck falls behind because they picked off a couple of my creatures, I feel like I can never win. And if I'm soup deck and I'm not picking off their creatures and I fall behind, I also feel like I can never win. So aggro wants to be ahead. Soup wants to be at parity. And it's really important for you to maintain that position in the game for each of those decks.
I co-sign that 100%. So what do you think of the Tarkir Dragonstorm comparison that seems to be running around? In the sense of, like, that was a format where it was like Boros versus the 5-color dragons decks. And we have a similar-ish thing happening here.
Yeah, was that the consensus? I just put that in our Discord. Was that the consensus before I put that in our Discord?
I thought I heard some scuttle from some other people, but maybe you were the inceptor of the idea. Whenever I read that idea, I was like, oh, yeah, that totally tracks with what I'm seeing. So maybe that's just our echo chamber.
I don't know if I was the inceptor or not, but I came to that conclusion, I think, on my own after, like... I lost a couple times to what I was describing of like Tome Blast into Potioner's Trove, into 5-drop, into 6-drop. I just felt like, man, I can never win. And it felt like how I was losing in Tarkir Dragonstorm, where they would play Globe and then Caustic Exhale and then like a 5-drop and a 6-drop. And they were just doing way more powerful stuff than I was in that middle of the game point. So the comparison for me isn't as much about, well, do I view this as a 2-deck format or a 20-deck format? And I do think it's got some of those same things where the colleges have different versions of themselves and there's different flavors of soup. I think the aggro decks largely look the same. It is white pressure you. But it's more about that ramp exists as a separate thing. Like, that was what stuck out to me about Dragonstorm, that it took me a really long time to get on board with and figure out. And then by the time I understood it, you couldn't really draft it
contested
anymore. Yeah. And this time I'm on board the train. Like, I'm at the point where, like, I figured it out and you could draft it. But the decks that have the play pattern to go kill your 2-drop, ramp, and then just never lose after that, because every card I play is so much better than every card you play.
Now, do you think you can do soup at non-rare? Like, is Snarl Song and Sundering Archaic and Divergent Equation, Arcane Omens, can you get there at uncommon. I mean, you can get a good, like, you can get a version that's like an 8 out of 10 and it's going to lose to the 9 out of 10 and 10 out of 10s. That's still okay.
I'm nervous playing for the late game if I don't have one of the rares on my list of ways to go over the top. Like, Snarlsong's good, but Snarlsong's not good enough unless you do multiple of them back-to-back, I don't think.
And it's much better against the aggro decks
than it is the late game decks. Yeah, late game way decks. Better against the aggro decks, yes.
Yeah. If you've never had your fractals bounced with the bounce a thing ramp Quandrix card, like, that's a surefire way to be like, oh man.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, if my plan is Divergent Equation, Arcane Omen, Snarlsong, I don't feel good about that deck, generally.
Yeah, I don't feel great, but I don't know if it's crazy to think that that is like the right thing for you to have drafted. Like, I don't know if it's like, that's what you got, but you should have done Silver Quill aggro. Like, maybe, but only you can know if that was what was open.
But some of that's a weird best of one thing, too. You know what I mean? Because the decks are so juiced
in
best of one.
Yeah.
I think in a normal pod, that might be good enough.
Yeah, well, one of my theories, and we'll see if this plays out in the Pro Tour, but one of my theories is that there's like a handful of cards, like the Concoctor that we were kind of excited about after early access.
The 4-5 Vigi? That card does work.
It does, and my guess is that cards like that, I've seen a lot of people talking about the 3 and a red 4-3 with Opus, get a plus and plus one counter, and if it's mm-hmm. 5 or more, it gets 2. Like, those are not cards that I am hoping to play in the best of one ladder ever. But mm-hmm. I imagine that those cards that like can't really be ignored are going to be stocks up in the PT drafts.
Yeah, that checks
out. Remember how after in Lauren Eclipse, like Lauren Eclipsed Rooftop Percher was like the thing that everyone was running at the Pro Tour. And then it was like after that where we were like, wait, is this card just good? And then everyone's playing Rooftop Percher. And I wonder if some similar ripple effects will happen here with cards like that. Commons where I'm like, I don't ever want to pick these highly. I don't think these particularly matter. But they also can't be ignored. And I wonder if those will show up next weekend.
Yeah, I like that shout.
I just wanted to, I went through most of my notes here about my philosophy for pack one and not picking commons, but I wanted to make a note on fixing. Because once I know which of these decks I'm going towards, like let's say it's I've identified a college that's open and that's what I'm going to be drafting, or I'm in the soup space or whatever. I take lands pretty highly after that, especially because if I'm confident that the college is open, I'll take lands over my, like, you know, on college commons because I expect them to wheel. And I really want to make sure my mana base is good, not only for my two color deck, but also because sometimes if you're drafting blue red and you snap up some good white fixing or just good, you know, get a couple Terramorphic expanses, being able to splash a good white removal spell or two or something becomes pretty free. And it just opens up the opportunity for you to play as many of the best cards that you see.
Yeah. I think it's weird in that I think the lands are super high picks. I've had several drafts lately where I've decided I was going to be soup later than I would have liked, like in an end of pack two. And I haven't had that many lands. But I do agree, if you know you're doing a thing, the land, especially if you know what you're doing is open, the lands become such high picks.
I think that here's my thing. I feel like if you end the draft and you have no lands, you did a bad job.
Oh, for sure.
That's my take.
I think most decks, even two color decks, probably want 2 to 3
yes.
on color tapped lands. And then if you're anywhere other than that, you probably want to be at least in the 5 to 6 range, 4 to 6 range, somewhere around there.
I agree. Those were the numbers I would say too. We've talked a little bit about rankings. I threw a new deck rankings out as, for me, soup number 1, blue red 2, then red white, then blue green, and then the black decks in last, black white and black green. I guess blue green and black white could be equal. I don't know, but I also this is more a thought exercise because it doesn't really matter what is best, because really the best is what is open for your seat, which is not a new concept.
Well, but I think that's exacerbated in this format, and it's nice that it's exacerbated. It's nice that reading the signals and drafting well gets rewarded, I think. Mm-hmm. More than deck rankings for me, it's almost like macro archetype rankings. So for me, I would have number one, if you've got powerful soup deck, that's equal to a powerful focused aggro deck. Like both of those are top of the food chain, I think, mm-hmm. whichever end of the spectrum you're on. And then in second place, a correctly built two-color deck with a great plan. And I think there's a very wide variety of those, whether it's Lorehold Aggro or Lorehold Leaves the Graveyard or Prismari Tempo or Prismari Control or just Quandrix Ramp and do some cool stuff. And then behind those is like a less powerful version of soup. Like maybe what we were talking about with you're the Snarl Song, Arcane Omens, Divergent Equation, like uncommon versions of the payoffs. And then at the bottom of the food chain is either incorrectly built or drafted two color decks, or that were kind of forced, or where you were competing with somebody else. Like that is the disaster scenario.
Yes. And I can speak from experience that I've gotten into those spots, really trying, have not gotten into them in the latter half of the week, but early in the week, definitely had spots where I'm like, I think there's another Silver Quill drafter here and it feels real bad.
Do you want to go to soup and outline that? You want to talk Prismari?
Yeah, let's do soup. Let's do soup and then we can talk Prismari.
Okay, so I've got a list of ways to go over the top at rare or mythic. And just kind of talking through what that means for your soup decks. First on the list is, and in no power rankings order here, although I will shout the ones that I think that are better than the others. Exhibition Tidecaller, that's blue for the O2. Opus, whenever you cast an instant sorcery, target player mills 3. And then if it's mana value 5 or more, they mill 10 instead.
Do you wait until you have a mill 10 trigger to run this out? Are you running this out on turn one if it's in your opener? What are you doing?
Never running it out on turn one. I either want a mill 3 trigger or a mill 10 trigger. Okay. I try to time it when I want my opponent to have to deal with it, because I assume it is going to die. So I try to time it on a turn where I can like play it, play something else, mill them, and then they have to spend their turn reacting to my Tidecaller, and then hopefully that leaves me free to tap out for a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is usually what I try to do with it. And I think this one is good, but not a reason to necessarily play a soup deck. And this is just good in any deck that's got a lot of spells.
This is just good in any blue deck, I think.
Correct. Yes.
It's gonna be hard for your blue decks. Prismari certainly is going to have a plethora of spells, but I imagine even Quandrix is going to have with prepared stuff running around. Like you're just going to get spells, and this is a real threat.
And better than ever a common, like where would you be on it versus like Snarl Song, pack one, pick one?
I think I'm still taking Tidecaller.
I think I am too. It's close, but that's about where its power level is.
We talked about Wisdom of the Ages. That's the 4 triple blue rare. Return all instant and sorcery cards from your graveyard to your hand. You have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. Exile Wisdom of the Ages. This is just an I win the game button in the right decks.
Wisdom of the Ages goes in the decks you're describing. Like the Prismari, yes. Like pick your threat off, draw some cards, and then you reload with 6 or 7 spells, which lets you tank up your hand even more and continue killing your opponent's threats, and also are probably making creatures in there. Like Wisdom of the Ages is insanely good with the 7 drop make 2 yes. 3/3s, because early you can discard, find your stuff, and then buy it back and then cast it for 7 mana later. Like it's trivially easy to put together a deck that wins the late game when you have Wisdom of the Ages. And I think it is the best payoff for the control version of the soup decks.
Yes, the card we're talking about is Visionary's Dance. That's the 7 mana, make 2/3/3 flyers, and you can pay 2 to discard it to like look at the top 2, put 1 in your hand, 1 into your graveyard. That I had 2 Visionary's Dances in my Wisdom of Ages deck, and I would have happily played like 4 of them because it felt like cycling for Zenith Flare. Like
yeah,
you're digging, it hits your land drop. Like the dream is Wisdom of Ages, find a land and a spell, bin the spell, land drop in hand, just keep hitting my land drops to get to my 7 mana play. And yeah, it's so good.
Do you know what else that card is insane with? Is Lorehold the Historian, because you can miracle it for 2 to make 2/3/3s. Have you done that yet?
Oh, I have not.
I've done it and had it done to me. It's very fun. not fun to be on the receiving end, but it's very fun to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to bop to Mathemagics here on this list. which is blue-blue XX, the mythic sorcery target player draws two to the X cards. So you're we're doing some, what are those called, exponents here in Mad, band director. But this, I think, is, if not the best, one of the best payoffs for the ramp version of the soup deck, because you're trying to get to 12, ideally 12 mana. If it's 12, they mill 32 cards or whatever. You win if you cast this for X equals 5.
Well, it's not and mill. You, importantly, it's draws, draw, but it's wins draw, on draw, the draw, spot.
Yeah. And usually if you do it for X equals 4, which is 10 mana, the game has gone on long enough that they also die at that point, because especially in the soup mirror, because the soup mirrors want to draw cards and they're looting and they're rummaging. So people are often naturally thinning their deck for you. So you usually only even have to get to 10. And the really fun thing about this is when you win with it, their whole library goes zoop, and then you see it go across the screen like solitaire. It's very satisfying.
And then their head explodes. Yeah. The cards like this make brush off, I think, very important for these control mirrors, these soup mirrors. That's the two blue-blue counter thing. If it's a non-creature, it costs two less. Like, it's only one in a blue. So it's basically negate or four mana counter a creature. Like, having ways to interact with these, like the soup mirrors, you can be like, I got my essence scatter to counter something. And then if they're on this other axis where Mathemagics or Wisdom of Ages is their I win button, and you don't have a way to interact with that, it's a real feel bad.
Well, and I think people are actually misevaluating brush off. Like, brush off's, I think, the biggest mover up for me this week if I'm playing one of these style decks, because it's negate plus. Like, it looks like a worse version of negate somehow when you look at it, but it's better negate in this format. Yes. Like, it's negate that also has the buyout clause of you can use this to counter a real spell also. That card is nuts in the format.
Yeah, brush off is good.
And another really good ramp payoff. I don't think this is quite as good as Mathemagics, but it's similar, which is Mind in a Matter. It's blue-green X sorcery, draw X cards, and you can put a permanent value with mana value X or less from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. This similarly incentivizes you to go towards ramp soup, and specifically a little bit more of a board-focused ramp soup, where, like, I have, when I've played this one, played that 4-5 Vigi 5-drop. Quite happily, because when you're Mathemagicsing for X equals 5 and then you put that down, it's not as good as Mathemagics because it doesn't let you win the game on a different access, but oftentimes drawing 5 cards and putting a 5 drop into play is good enough to win the game.
I have taken this early, and then I've mostly been getting into blue-red based decks in this format, and I've been able to splash, but Mind in the Matter is just not good as a splash in the blue-red decks, because it's like a clunky card draw spell, and it's not like I'm running a lot of excellent permanents, but it makes sense that this is good in a like green-blue ramp deck, because then you're hitting your land drops faster and you're playing those things that affect the board.
It's like tempo. You can throw the word around, but there are wide variations of how you want the game to end in the late game for these late game multicolored decks, and what that incentivizes you to do in the draft, which is back to point number one from the format truths, is you have to pay attention during the drafts and be thinking actively about what your best cards are incentivizing you to do and how to maximize them and what cards to put around them.
Not quite as powerful as those few spells we talked about is Resonating Loot. That's two blue red for the artifact. Lands you control have tap to add two mana of any one color. Spend this mana only to cast instant and sorcery spells. And it also has the Library of Alexandria text, tap to draw a card, activate only if you have seven or more cards in your hand. But this is largely a mana doubler. And in the right decks, it's insane if you untap with this.
Correct. It goes in the same decks as Wisdom of Ages. It goes in the Prismari control soup decks. And it, similarly to how Mind in a Matter is a less good version of Mathemagics in the ramp decks, this is a slightly less good version of Wisdom of the Ages in the Prismari control decks.
Well, but they go together. I mean, you sort of need, this is where I like, you said Diversion Equation is Wisdom of Ages at home. It is, but one of the reasons I like it is because you can get it more reliably. And so, like, okay, I got a Resonating Loot. Well, then my Divergent Equation
is Wisdom of the Ages.
Is Wisdom of Ages, and I'm going to see that way more often because it's an uncommon.
For sure, yes. Arc of Hunger is up next. This is the two red-white artifact. Whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, this artifact deals one damage to each opponent, and you gain a life, and you can tap it to mill a card and play that card this turn. This is a reason to do the Lorehold Leaves the Graveyard stuff. And again, you can't force it because that deck has to be open for it to be good, But if that deck's open, this card is insanely good there and lets you do engine-y enough stuff that you can actually go over the top of some of the decks that are trying to win the late game.
Well, and once you have redundant ways to have stuff leave the graveyard, like if this isn't the only thing, you can drain them out in a hurry. That's one of the things that like I didn't quite realize. Red has so much burn in this format that you Arc of Hunger just plays into that so well, where you're like, and plus the life gain helps you, you know, keep out of reach of other aggressive decks. It just does so much, but you really can burn people out. I have splashed Arc of Hunger in a blue-red deck this week.
Oh, for sure. And I'm sure yeah. It would be great there. That's one of the reasons Tome Blast is so good, because in the control mirrors, sometimes your winning is like Tome Blast you early, Tome Blast you early in the face again, Wisdom of Ages back my two Tome Blasts, Tome Blast you two more times, flashback my two Tome Blasts. Like, it's well, really and weird.
And in blue-red, Violent Outburst goes face. That's the blue-red deal three Tapa thing. Like, I've had a trophy deck early in the week that I posted in the Discord, and someone was like, how does this deck win? And I was like, burn, baby. Like, I got my Rubble Rousers, I got Tome Blasts, I got Violent Outbursts. Like, it's not hard to just be like, okay, two to the face, three to the face, get those things back, two to the face, three to the face.
And the last one on this list, which is a very different access, is Together as One. This is like the plus version of Snarl Song. And it's kind of cool that there are tiers of all the incentives at rare, and then there's like a juiced down version at uncommon, it's still very good, and then there's kind of like common, you're digging the bottom of the barrel. But Together as One is 6 mana for the sorcery with Converge. Target player draws X, it deals X damage any target, and you gain X life, where X is the number of colors of mana spent to cast this spell.
Yeah, Cruel Ultimatum.
It's very good. I think also one of the things I've tried to start doing based on the back of Resonating Loot and Arc of Hunger and also Potioner's Troves running around everywhere, Abrade Stocks has gone way up for me. Like, or just having an incidental way to interact with an artifact is, I think, the good in this format.
The one and a white 2/2 lifelink, you can pay one to sack it to blow up an artifact or enchantment, is, I mean, it's filler plus, but it's nice to have that as an option for blowing up these powerful cards.
And that moves us on to, so I really want to have one of the cards on that list, at least, before I'm really trying hard to win the late game. Once I have one of those cards, I will pick Potioner's Trove over almost everything, which takes us to the fixing ramp portion. So Potioner's Trove is 3 mana for the artifact, taps to add a mana of any color, and taps to gain 2 life, activate only if you've cast an instant or sorcery spell. Potioner's Trove, making it so that you can't get burned out in the late game, is so important for these decks.
I totally agree.
So that's the premium version. And then the green ramp.
Because you know what's funny about this format is that there are, like, sometimes there is just one spell in a format where you're like, okay, the red deck has a deal 4 that can go face. So I really want to make sure, if I can, to not go below 4 against red decks. But red decks have like 16 cards that can go face in this format. And so your life total is always at a precarious place against them in theory. So that's why the consistent life gain that Potioner's Trove can provide is so good.
Well, and the black decks have all that bloodletting stuff going on too.
Right.
The black decks can do it too. So Potioner's Trove, tier 1 fixing, then the green ramp stuff for me, if assuming you're in the ramp version of this deck. And if you're not in the ramp version of the deck, I think the dual lands are better than the green ramp. But then I would have duels below the green ramp in the ramp version. You also want to keep an eye out for Converge payoffs, Snarl Song. We've shouted its praises this episode, Arcane Omens as well. And I would say if you're packing Arcane Omens, pack Ways to Rummage alongside it.
You don't have Sundering Archaic on this list, and I would like you to. This is the 6 mana 3/3 Converge, exile a permanent equal to the Converge, and then you can do the 2 mana bottom something from someone's graveyard.
I haven't cast it yet. I have it for the first time in this deck that I just got to Mythic with. So I'm excited to play. I haven't played with or against it much. When it's been played against me, I've largely been like, oh, okay. Like, I'm still doing bigger things than you.
Yeah, I think the combo of it's like FTK plus, I think you want all pieces of the buffalo of this card. You want to care about it being a Flame Tongue Kavu or whatever, a Ravenous Chupacabra. Like, the more you can consistently kill things with it, it's great. The fact that it hits, like it does the Abrade thing, it hits enchantments and artifacts too, is stocks up. And I really like it if you're like, and I also care about things leaving the graveyard. So I'm going to do that.
Past that, the recipe is card draw, specifically cheap card draw, preferably to help you hit your land drops, or environmental scientist type cards to help you hit your land drops. And then cheap interaction. I mean, it's not like a rocket science recipe. I mean, we've seen decks like this before. I think the thing that is unique about this format for the soup decks is I think there's two flavors. I think there's like a spell focused control version. And I think there's also a ramp focused, slightly more permanent based version, assuming you're talking about like Snarl Song as permanent based, because it plays to the board and you're killing them with damage. And then there are so many incentives for you to go into the deck and let you win the late game. Like, that's a lot of cards we listed that are trump cards. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. A lot of different versions of them, and many of them are rare and many of them are unique to these decks. So just they're very powerful. But also, like, it's not crazy for you to see Wisdom of the Ages pick 5 or pick 6. Like, that Correct. Looks like, in a normal format, that looks like a D build around or whatever. And in here, mm-hmm. it's an A build around.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, as people catch on, like, you won't see those cards pick 5 anymore, because people will know that they're, like, so good. And like I said, maybe Best of 1 won't adjust, but I have to imagine that in Best of 3, or certainly on Magic Online and in pod play, if you're like doing a limited RCQ or whatever, that like that's not going to happen there.
But then I think if that stuff happens, that's why I think this, it's weird in that I think the format is kind of done in that there are not much more evolutions. There's like, there's not new things to be discovered, but I don't think the drafts are ever going to be boring, because because there's such distinct things that all of the decks are asking you to do, and figuring out when to pull the trigger on, yes, I'm locking in on this, and here's how I'm going to try to enact this plan, because there's so many unique plans to enact.
I feel very excited by pack one in this format. And if I'm drafting soup, I feel excited by packs two and pack three. When I'm like in the clear, and when I'm clearly the only Lorehold drafter at the table by the end of pack one, when I realize that's what's happening, I don't think it's that exciting, but maybe
I agree, but pack one is still interesting.
Yeah,
like there's some formats where like when you get to week two or week three, you know what card you're taking out of every single pack from the jump almost.
Yeah, I look in the upper left corner and I just take that card out of every pack. That's what I do right now.
There you go. Yeah. Love it.
I'm gonna chat briefly about Prismari. We've talked a lot about this, and I'm sure you can pipe in with your blue-red experiences, but I just think this is such a good shell for a late-game control deck. I haven't had to do... I've been mostly a spell-heavy version. I haven't done, like... I do think Expressive Fire Dancer is a key. That's the one on a red, 2/2, Opus +1, and then Double Strike if it's 5 or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that card's great. Like, that card's great specifically because it lets you toe the line between Lorehold Aggro and Prismari Tempo.
Well, and I think it's... Again, I'm never I don't want to talk too much about a common here, but I'm never taking it early.
Sure.
But it's great. It's also great in the spell heavy versions of the deck, but I think it's probably very key to a tempo creature version of this deck, which I just haven't drafted very much yet. But it's really good in the spell heavy version too, because it often lets you sneak in like 3-6 damage early, and then your burn can take care of the rest later on if you're mm-hmm. a control deck. But we've talked about Divergent Equation as being part of this puzzle at Uncommon. I really want to shout out Rubble Rouser. That's the 2 and a red, 1/4. When it enters, you can discard a card if you do draw a card, and you can tap it for a red to exile a card from your graveyard, adds a red mana, and deals a damage. This card's great in blue-red. I think this deck is like extraordinarily mana hungry. I just never run out of things to do with my mana. Red has a lot of redundant burn, so honestly, like, the Rubble Rouser damage, plus your Tome Blast, plus your Thunder Drum Soloist, Opus triggers.
Thunder Drum Soloist is not a card in this format, right?
I think I largely agree with that, but it is.
Every time my opponents have played Thunder Drum Soloist, I have fist bumped.
Yeah. It's largely not a good card. Violent Outburst, the blue-red, deal 3, tap a thing. Like, there's just a lot of ways to deal damage to face. We've talked a lot about like ramp hitting land drops in these decks, so I won't say Potioner's Trove, but I will say Tablet of Discovery has been great in these spell-heavy versions. That's the 2 and a red artifact. When it enters, you mill a card. You may play that card this turn. It taps for a red or taps for double red for instant and sorcery spells. Like, just ignore the first part of it and just think about it as it's a manalith that taps for double mana for my spells, and if you happen to draw a card off of this, all the better. But you don't need to. Don't get greedy with this.
Or a land. Like that feels great too. When you mill a land and play the land and then play a spell.
But also play it on turn three and don't worry about. But sometimes you get to play it on turn three, exile Tome Blast, and then cast Tome Blast, and you're just like winning.
Yeah.
Sonar Unfinished Genius is an incredible card in this deck and I think in this format. So this is the blue red 04 uncommon. It enters prepared. You tap to make a treasure if you've cast an instant or sorcery spell, and its prepared spell is Wild Idea, 3 blue red for a sorcery. Search for an instant or sorcery card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle. Like early blocker, helps fix for splashing, and it finds your best cards. Like all of those cards we listed, all of a sudden Sonar is just like, here's a second copy of it. It's a wombo combo with Micah. So Micah is the 3 in a red 4/4. That when you cast an instant or sorcery, you can sack an artifact to double it. When with Sonar in play, those triggers go on the stack, or like that Micah trigger goes on the stack regardless of if you have a treasure. So cast a spell with Micah's trigger on the stack, make a treasure with Sonar, then sack the treasure to Micah to copy that spell is pretty incredible. I've liked, you know, Goblin Glassrite is also pretty good in these decks. That's the one in red. 2/2 with a prepared spell, single red, make a treasure. Just because, like,
I also don't think that's a card, really.
I think that's a card. It's a card. You have to, again, care about all the things. Do you have a Micah? Are you splashing? Do you have a lot of Opus triggers? Because it's a 2-drop with an Opus trigger. Like, it does things. If you don't have 3 Tome Blasts, like, this does provide a speed bump against the aggro decks, and it's not dead for you later in the game. Again, don't, like, am I hoping that my decks don't need to run a Goblin Glassrite? Yes. Have I cut them before? Yes. But it's one of the filler plus commons I've identified.
That checks out with me. I think the other deck to touch in on, which I don't have an outline of, but I don't think it needs an outline, Boros aggro or Silverquill aggro, like the white aggro decks, largely you just want to be playing great white creatures and you want to be an aggro deck. Like you want to have some repartee triggers that synergize from removing your opponent's stuff, but just threats, removal, like it's an LR Cabs deck, but it's a very good LR Cabs deck when it comes together. The cost is if you start down that route and it's contested, it's really bad. Like there's not many places to go without doing the full pivot. And then by the time you realize you need to full pivot, a lot of times the powerful cards are gone and you can't pivot into anything. That's the risk.
Yeah. Which I think is mitigated by my like, don't take commons approach. Like I really think you're just going to be in a better spot for your draft. If those first 8 picks, don't worry about them looking cohesive. I think if you're, you know, to pull from Eduardo's quote about like, if you're not comfortable staying open until pack 2, pick 8, it's fine to like, take a rare early and hold on for dear life. I really don't think you can do that in this set effectively.
I agree. You gotta figure out how to stay open until pack 2, pick 8.
But it's not pack 2, pick 8. Because
it's pack 1, pick 8 or something. Pack 1, pick 10.
Yes. Yeah. Like that's when you should know. But if you've set yourself up in a way where like I can't jump ship and I'm seeing clearly what I should be doing at the end of pack 1, that's what you want to avoid. Those are the worst drafts you're going to have.
Yes, for sure. Speaking of drafts, I want to take you through this draft that I did right before we started recording, because I think it's an interesting, I think it's got elements of some of the stuff we're talking about from navigating drafts. So I just popped that at the bottom of the dock here.
Great.
So
let's do it.
Pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. It's no commons in consideration.
Of course.
There is a Burst Lightning, red, instant, deal 2. If you kicked it, it deals 4 instead. And in the rare slot, there is an Exhibition Tidecaller, blue for the 0/2. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, target player mills 3. And then if you have Magnum Opus, they mill 10.
Yeah, I think I would take Tidecaller here. But Burst Lightning is extremely good.
Burst Lightning is extremely good, but Tidecaller is unique. Burst Lightning is not unique.
I agree.
So took Tidecaller, pack 1, pick 1. Pack 1, pick 2. Curious to see if you agree here or not. There are, again, no commons in consideration. This pack is largely Garbaggio. There's a flow state, 1 and a blue sorcery. Look at the top 3. Put 1 in your hand and the rest on the bottom. If you have an instant or sorcery, you get 2 cards instead. And then there's also Primary Research, 4 and a white. When it enters, return target non-land permanent card mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. At the beginning of your end step, if a card left your graveyard this turn, draw a card.
We will diverge here. I would take primary research here.
It was close for me between those two cards.
But so pack one, pick one. Mm-hmm. What would you take here?
I would take...
I think primary research is, like, for me, clearly the best card in this pack.
I think I would take flow state, pack one, pick one.
Interesting.
So maybe that's why we're different.
Yeah, I just think flow state is the kind of card that, like, I almost think should be wheeling. Like, because it goes in a very specific kind of deck. It goes in a spell-heavy Prismari deck.
It's fine in a soup deck, too. It's not that bad to spend turn two finding a land drop or whatever you need.
Okay.
I think and not to dive in on this, because I don't think this is a particularly interesting sticking point for the draft, but
it's
a good discussion. I would rather start blue than start white. And I don't think primary research is powerful enough for me to start white, not aggro, is how I feel about it.
Yeah, I just feel so much more like primary research is the best card. It also goes great with Tidecaller. And it's just like a good splash. Like, yeah. I play in blue, red, and splash research. I don't know. My feeling is
like, I hear that. It's close. Here. Like, you wouldn't, it wouldn't shock me if I'm just wrong about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you're taking primary search. I'm taking flow state. I don't think it matters ultimately in the direction of the draft, particularly. Oof. So pack one, pick three, you see another hot garbage pack where I think the best card in the pack, despite our discussion from earlier in the episode, is Eternal Student. 3 and a black for the 4/2, and you can pay 1 and a black, exile it from your graveyard to make 2/1s. Is there anything else that stands out to you over Eternal Student?
Can Arnon be better? The 2 and a black, 2/2 death touch, whenever a creature with power toughness 1 or less dies, you drain 2. Could that be better than Eternal Student?
I think it could be. That's really hard for me to wrap my brain around. Much like the Campus Composer Epiphany.
I feel like Eternal Student is homeless. And at least Arnon is like, I do a thing, like I'm part of this redundant drain package that black has. But yes, I agree. I think it's between those two. I guess like there's an ink shape demonstrator. The 3 and a white, 3/4 ward 2 repartee gets +1/+0 and lifelink.
That's bad.
I don't think I'm taking that. There's Deluge Virtuoso. But like, here's a spot where like there's Deluge Virtuoso. 2 and a blue, 2/2. When it enters, tap a thing, put a stun counter. And Opus, it gets +1/+1 or +2/+2 if it's 5 or more mana. There would be formats where you'd be like, just get deeper into blue. Take Deluge Virtuoso. It is a disaster, I think, to be taking Deluge Virtuoso pick 3 in this format.
I agree, because what it does is it forces you to be blue. And if Witherbloom or if Silver Quill is open and what you're supposed to be doing, you feel like you missed the boat. And you never want to feel like you missed the on-ramp to a deck.
Yeah. Okay, so you're taking one of these two black uncommons.
Yeah, I took Eternal Student. You could sell me on Arnon.
Okay.
Oh, but wow, I think, it doesn't change the direction of the draft. Mm-hmm. So pack one, pick 4 then. See the following cards as options. There's a Pest Mascot. That's the Witherbloom 2/3 trample that when you gain life, it gets a +1/+1 counter. There's also a Mindful Biomancer, 1 and a green, 2/2. When it enters, you gain a life and you can pay 2 and a green to pump it +2/+2. That you could make a case goes in Witherbloom, but again, isn't a great card. There's a Last Gasp, 1 and a black instant target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. That you could definitely say goes in Witherbloom. And then there's Teacher's Pest in the uncommons, black green for the 1/1 menace. Whenever it attacks, you gain a life and you can pay black green, return it from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And I think that's largely it in consideration. There's some white cards here too, but worth noting there's no blue, no red, and a density of Witherbloom cards.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think I would take Last Gasp here, despite my I hate commons and don't want to take them stance. I see you took Teacher's Pest. I wonder if I had Arnon, if I would feel more like taking Teacher's Pest.
Well, this is already selling me that Arnon is right over Eternal Student, because yeah. I don't want to play a black deck with Eternal Student in it anyway. And Arnon is definitely better in Witherbloom than Eternal Student.
Yeah. Like, I guess you could take Teacher's Pest, try and wheel Pest Mascot. I agree we're getting Witherbloom signals, but I still feel like Last Gasp is like the best card for Witherbloom.
I agree Last Gasp is the best card. But if we're supposed to be Witherbloom, Teacher's Pest is way more important. And Witherbloom, black's going to give you removal at some point. If Witherbloom's open, you're going to get removal spells.
But if Witherbloom is open, Teacher's Pest should wheel.
I think Pest Mascot should wheel. I don't think Teacher's Pest should ever wheel in pack one.
Okay.
Pack one, pick 5. Again, largely a weak pack. There is a brush off here for the blue deck, the 2BB instant counter target spell. It costs 1 and a blue less if it targets instant or sorcery. And there's also Last Gasp chilling here, 1 and a black instant target creature gets -3/-3. And a rehearsed debater, 2 and a white, 3/3 Vigi, repartee. If you cast an instant or sorcery spell, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Like, there's some stuff. Like, you kind of have to make a decision here of whether you want to go back towards blue or keep going with the Witherbloom signals you've seen.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. So what did you end up taking?
I took Last Gasp here to pair with the Teacher's Pass. I felt like I was seeing Witherbloom signals.
I agree.
Okay, so took the Last Gasp, pack one, pick six. See the following cards as options. There is Nothing and an Elite Interceptor, which is the white one, 2 enters prepared, and it's got Rejoinder, 1 and a white, to tap or untap target creature, draw a card.
Yes, this card is great, and it's like a spec. It's extra good in Silverquill. Because you get a free repartee trigger.
Yeah, very good there. And this is the first white card we've seen, but it's the only magic card in the pack.
Currently, you have 2 blue cards, 2 black cards, a black green card, and a white card. I feel so fine about the spot you're in right now because you have taken, if not the best card, close to the best card out of every single pack. And that's all that matters.
Well, and then figuring out, but that's hard. If you're not used to doing that, I think you and I are very comfortable doing that. If you're not used to doing that, you need to learn that skill.
You got in this draft format. Set's going to teach you how to do that or you're going to struggle, I think.
Yes. The next pack has, again, Nothing. And a choice between a Melancholic Poet to go with your Silverquill deck, the 1 and a black, 2/2, repartee, drain your opponent and you gain a life. Or Zamone's Experiment, 3 and a green sorcery, look at the top 5. As you called it, stock up at home. I like that for this card.
Yeah.
You can either put 2 lands on the battlefield or draw 2 creatures or some combination thereof.
Yeah. I have not played Zamone's Experiment. I could see it here. I might be inclined to take Poet, but it is a common, so... I
think Poet doesn't matter, and there is a world where, like, I see a Snarl Song or something, and all of a sudden Zamone's Experiment really matters.
And you kind of fist pump taking Zamone's Experiment when you see pack one, pick eight.
Yeah, pack one, pick eight. Then there is a wide variety of cards. There's an Infirmary Healer, 1 and a green, 2/3 enters prepared for Stream of Life as the prepared spell to gain target player X life for green and X. But I think the even more reassuring thing about this pack is, first of all, there's top common in the format, Pursue the Past. That's
ding, 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 ding.
I really wish I'd looked at the data at the beginning of this episode. It would have been so much more fun. But there's a variety of cards here that say late game decks are open. There's Pursue the Past. There's still a blue-red duel here. There's still a Rapturous Moment here. 4 blue-red for the sorcery. Draw 3, discard 2. Add 5 mana. All of these cards say... head to the late game to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. Huh. Rapturous Moment with Exhibition Tidecaller is so good. You have the potential.
Would you take that here over Infirmary Healer?
No, I would not. It might be tough for me if I hadn't taken Zamone's Experiment to take Infirmary Healer. I largely don't actually like Rapturous Moment in my Prismari decks, but
it's a sorcery.
It's a sorcery, and like. But the potential with reason I was shouting out with Tidecaller is it is a potential for 2 5 back-to-back mana plus Opus triggers. You can mill them for 20 with Moment. I have stormed, like, Brain Freeze and Empty the Warrens are in the bonus sheet. I have stormed off thanks to Rapturous Moment. So, but I definitely think Healer is the best card in this pack.
And then pick 9, we did it? Question mark. We wheeled Campus Composer.
We did it.
Campus Composer is the best card in the pack, but again, you're not thrilled about it, and you wheel like a Pterodactyl, a Shopkeeper's Bane, a Mindful Biomancer, and then all of a sudden it's seeming kind of like Quandrix is open.
Quandrix late game. One,
you hit a Jot. So we briefly flirted with Witherbloom, briefly flirted with white for the Elite Interceptor, and then I think as the draft goes on, Quandrix gets more and more open and it becomes apparent that I'm supposed to be Quandrix. But that kind of navigation of the draft in pack one, I think, is what we're advocating for.
And this looks like you end up with a basically Quandrix Converge deck, not really splashing for anything other than your Converge payoffs. That is like the aforementioned 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10. Like, you've got
I don't feel great about this deck for sure. It's fine. It's above average, but it's going to lose to the great soup decks.
Not every deck. You can't. Every seat in this format cannot draft the 10 out of 10.
Correct.
You just can't.
Yeah, I feel good about how I navigated this draft. I think this is where I was supposed to end up, for sure.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it looks like a good deck. You have all the things. You just don't have, like, a mythic or whatever, and that's fine.
I don't have the auto win buttons, and not having the auto win buttons is tough when mm-hmm. somebody in the mirror has an auto win button.
For sure.
But we have the Tidecaller. Tidecaller does a lot.
Tidecaller does a lot. Yeah. I like it.
All right. That's it. That was a ton. I'm excited to continue podcasting about this format. I think it's going to offer lots of spaces to dive in and get into the nitty gritty of archetypes and that sort of thing.
And it's very exciting that we just get the Pro Tour immediately next week. So we're going to get to armchair quarterback some PT drafts, which I'm excited for.
High level, see how different it is from best of one.
It's got to be so different.
That would be my thought as well, yeah. All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to all our stuff, our episode backlogs, YouTube channel, Twitch streams, Patreon, merch, all of it at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.